Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Hi, my name is Derek Taylor, and you are listening to 5G Sports Talk. Today, me and my great co-host, Akeem Adey, is going to break down week one so far of the NFL season. And, boy, did it get off to a fast start for a lot of teams. Some teams that had some head scratches on. I know my co-hosts have a couple of head scratches itself. Some outstanding performances from certain players, expected and unexpected. And some letdowns from other players. Also, Roger Goodell, his suspension of Jonathan Vilma vacated. Vilma is now cleared to play. For now, the judge found in favor of Jonathan Vilma, and he is cleared to play. We're going to talk about what impact does that ruling have on Roger Goodell's authority. And mind you, even though that ruling came down, Roger Goodell still can do what he want to do. So he used conventional wisdom, just go with the judge and just take it on the chin, or we just say, I don't care about what the legal system says, I'm going to do what I want. What do you have for us today, Adey?
Of course, just plenty of NFL opening day discussion, you know.
Yeah,
like you said, we definitely want to go through a review, talk about some interesting playbook orientated things, some things coaches like to do with the playbook, and you know, and of course we want to talk about stardom or sit 'em. You know, we want to talk about some of the players based on today's performance. You know, some of the leaders, so to speak, who led the team or were involved in some way, shape, or form at the quarterback position, in other positions, should they start them or should they sit them?
Yeah. Yeah, you should. Some people should have sat. some people, they should have let start. We don't run it. Wish we did, because we're going to get into that, because that definitely has to be address based on what we saw today. But starting off, New Orleans Saints, Washington Redskins at New Orleans. I got to say, I didn't have Washington winning this game. I thought the Saints with Drew Brees and company would be able to spoil RG3's first professional game of his career, and boy was I wrong. RG3 played like a vet. He actually outplayed Drew Brees. RG3 didn't even sweat anything. His passer rating in that Saints game, 139.9. His passer rating with completing 73% of his passes for average pass completion of 12 yards. Threw for two scores, only sacked once, threw for over 300 yards. And Drew Brees threw under 50%. That Redskins defense definitely showed up and really made things tough for Drew Brees. Drew Brees threw two picks as well, and he was also sacked twice. I think Alfred Morrison, another rookie, running back for the Redskins, ran for 96 yards, two touchdowns, 3.4 yards a carry. You would like that to be higher, but he got in the end zone twice, so you can't complain about that. Talked about the receiver corps. Everybody had question marks. Pierre Garçon and Aldrick Robinson showed up, both having a touchdown this game. And I think the big thing was really RG3's play. Playing the Saints team that was still in the game for the most part. That fourth quarter put up 15 points just to try to keep pace. And they ultimately lost by 8. But RG3 made every drive count. He didn't waste any drives at all. Yeah, you can't score the drive, but, boy, he looked very, very, very impressive out there. What do you take from this game?
Oh, man, I'm on the same page. You know, neither one of us expected Washington to get off the ground like that. In fact, I went on record to say that Drew Brees was going to take the rookie to school. Boy, 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 am I eating those words right now. I mean, you just said the man hit a hallmark of a 139.9% accuracy rating. That's just... He had John Madden video game numbers, man. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Not one pick. One sack. That's not his fault. Two touchdowns, and he threw for 320 yards, as you said. Alfred Morris got into the game, 28 attempts, 96 yards, two touchdowns. Even Pierre Thomas got a little play in there, you know, a little bit here and there. Lance Moore on the Saints end of the field, he had six receptions for 120 yards on one touchdown. Pierre Garcon, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but Garcon, you know,
yeah,
four receptions for the Reds, 109 yards, one TD, of course. And back to the Saints, you know, there were six receptions by Jimmy Graham, 85 yards, one touchdown. What did you think about Williams, the defensive back on the Redskins, his play?
He did well. You know, I'll say this. He didn't get beat down the field, you know, and just not even him. You know, because the play in the secondary is really a team effort. It really is. And it's not normally seen that way. But it's really a huge team effort. No big plays down the field for Drew Brees. None. His longest pass completion was 33 yards. That's it. RG3 had multiple – let me say it again. Lance Moore – longest catch, 33 yards. Jimmy Graham, longest catch, 23. And Marcus Colson, longest was 25. That's it. Everything was less than 20 yards. So the Redskins made sure they kept the ball in front, which means that secondary, working together, made sure that they kept the Saints wide receivers in front of them. Cedric Griffin also played a heck of a defensive game as well. No, he recorded only two tackles, but he wasn't a liability. You know, he was not a liability out there. That whole secondary kept that high-powered Saints wide receiving core under control. You know, it's kind of the bend don't break. Now, I was talking about plays to 20 yards or more. Drew Brees had three of those, right? RG3 had six. Pierre Garçon, 88 yards, was the longest reception for him. Aldrick Robinson, 29-yard reception. Santana Moss, 27-yard reception. Fred Davis, the tight end, 26-yard reception. Roy Hugh, got 21 yards, his longest reception. Logan Paulson, the tight end, one catch, 22 yards. Josh Morgan, again, one catch, 21 yards. That's a lot of big plays. That's a lot of downfield plays to where you can't throw the ball underneath because he's going deep, he's going long. And I'm not saying 50 yards, but anytime the secondary is stretched in the field that way, that's a lot of big plays for a rookie quarterback to have in his first game of the season against the New Orleans Saints, who is a very, very talented team that most of us, if not all of us, believe we'll make the playoffs this year. And RG3 is so funny. His jersey number is 10, and he scored 10 points every quarter. Really? Since last year, everybody's talking about Tim Tebow throwing for 316 against the Steelers, RG3 put up 40 points on the Saints and scored 10 points every quarter, matching his jersey number. What I mean, really, very impressive. I mean, that passing game looked well. Look, they were stretching the field and made the Saints have to play defense. It was no freebies. So,
yeah, and I'm definitely proud of RG3 because, you know, he basically quieted all the noise because, as I'm sure you recall, a lot of the critics were saying that he was going to have a terrible, terrible first game. In fact, a lot of people were banking on him to have a Andy Luck-like debut. Oops, did I say that? I think I did.
Yeah.
I think I did. And unfortunately for the critics, he proved once again that the critics were wrong and that he played like the Heisman. I mean, that's the best way I could put it.
Yeah.
He played like a guy who deserved a Heisman Trophy in college, and he brought it to the NFL. That's what he looked like on the field, a pro.
He sure did. And all you sports fans out there, football fans out there, you need to understand something, you know, and I mean this in the nicest way possible. A lot of fans, even I bet you a lot of players, okay, on the Saints team, maybe even defense court, I'm not sure. But I can tell you a fair share of people was looking at RG3 thinking, oh, yeah, here comes Michael Vick. So we're not really going to worry about playing a lot of coverage because he's going to run. He's going to tell you, going to put the ball down, and he's going to run because, you know, hey, that's what we're used to seeing black quarterbacks do, right? Well, RG3 ran the ball 10 times, but he ran due to pressure. That's why he ran. He wasn't focusing on running. That's why he completed 19 of 26 passes. So the fact that he can complete passes at 73% rate and run, if he can keep, obviously he's not going to pass at 73% every game. It's not real, okay? But if he can complete at least 55 to 60% of his passes, honestly, he's already ahead of Michael Vick at the age he is now when Michael Vick was that age. He's already ahead of him. And next week, the game plan is going to be a little different for RG3 because he's proven, I can throw the ball. You better play the pass. But if you do, I can't scramble. So what do? I think his potential is a lot higher than Andy Luck's. And remember the whole hype? Andy Luck is NFL ready right now. That's not the way RG3 looks. Looked like he was NFL ready right now as well.
Yeah, and then what we got a chance to witness today by watching Andy Luck is that he's going to be a pro, and he's probably going to be a solid pro down the line. But right now, he's still a rookie. He's still a rookie, and it was very evident in the way that he basically crumbled under pressure, because I mean, he crumbled. I mean, you know, look at how many interceptions he threw today. He put up some yardage. He did score, you know, and he did, like I said, he didn't do the worst because, you know, when you measure some of the pros, you know, a lot of pros had a nice amount of interceptions, but he had not only the interceptions, he was sacked several times. And a lot of his interceptions were definitely decision-based. He just made bad decisions.
Yes, it was. You're right. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I had to agree with you. You're right. A lot of his interceptions was decision-based.
And speaking of that, I guess we might as well go ahead and discuss the Colts and the Bears game since we keep bringing them in there. What did you think about this particular game when you got a chance to really analyze the entirety of the game?
Look, I'm going to say this. For all the listeners out there, right, we had a show earlier this week on Thursday. We were giving our picks. And a day was like, hey, look, I try to be a little modest for the Colts. I said they'll probably lose by 7 to 10 points, okay? I gave them that. My co-host was being disrespectful, and I told him. he said they're going to get blown out by at least 20. And I said, that is some disrespectful thing right there. I mean, really? Sure enough, they blew them out by 20. Wasn't even a game at no point of the game. Let me take that back. When Indy scored 7, Chicago had the first quarter was a game. After when the second quarter started, it was all Brandon Marshall. It was all Bears defense. It was all crazy. And I you need to go play the lotto.
Oh, wow.
You hit it right. Wow. You said 20 points. And I didn't think it would be that bad. But, it was 20 points. It was 20 points.
I don't know, because I'm looking at some of my other picks, and a little off. And I think I'm being nice. some of the other picks, you know, like the Buffalo pick, for example. Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
I was way off.
I think we all were.
That was an embarrassing game. Wow.
I think we all were. And I'm going to say this, too. I'm going to draw a contrast between the two. The Colts did look good in the preseason. Andy Luck looked good. And by the way, we're not saying that RG3, oh, he's just going to be the joint and Andy Luck, you know, is just going to be mediocre. You know, today wasn't his lucky day. All quarterbacks have it. Just ask Drew Brees. You know, it wasn't a breeze for him today. He went up against RG3. But these two quarterbacks are definitely going to have more good games than bad games. Because, again, Andy still threw for over 300 yards. You know,
I think
once the offensive line and everybody get their stuff together, they'll get better in time. I mean, Reggie Wayne is going to be there. Had a big game, 9 catches, 135 yards. Just couldn't find the end zone. Brandon Marshall, like I knew, big game, 9 receptions, 119 yards, and a score. But this Colts offense is going to get better. They was playing a top-notch defense, one of the best defenses in the league, you know. So I'll see what Andy does next week. If his numbers stay consistent, you know, or I should say less picks, more touchdowns, good yardage, good passing percentage, then it's really just the pieces. Because let's not forget, Peyton Manning stunk it up a little bit his first year too.
Yeah, you know? And it was funny because they compared the two, and then the stats were like dead on for the first game. I mean, Andy Luck had more yardage, but you know, we all know that the Peyton Manning comparisons, that's going to be throughout the entire season.
Yeah, throughout his entire career, as long as he's a Colt. And
let's begin.
You know, he's trying to fill some huge shoes that's going to play in a little while tonight against the Steelers. But again, I mean, as far as his game today, I'm gonna give him a C+. You know, too many picks. That's what too many picks and low passer completion. But other than that, you know, he was getting the ball down the field. Reggie Wayne's stock in fantasy is still going to be fine because he is the target. And it's just going to take Luck some time. It's going to take that team time to gel together. It's not even really Andy. It's just that whole team as a whole is going to have to gel together. But, boy, the Bears had their numbers. 5 turnovers, they had their number. I mean, somebody please call 911 because they're consistently stealing the ball.
Now, I will say this about the Bears, too. What I noticed, the scary part, if you happen to be a Bears fan, the scary part about this is that if you watch the offense and the defense, you did not see the total potential of this team. You didn't see the best defense that the Bears has to offer, nor did you see the best offense that the Bears has to offer. And with that being said, if you're a fan or if you just enjoy football in general, that can be scary. And so what I think the Bears definitely need to concentrate on is they need to be careful with their penalties going forward on the defensive end. Very costly. Could have been when you're playing a team that can match you pound for pound offensively. And I think also one of the issues that they need to adjust on the defensive end is make your tackles and catch the ball. I mean, don't bat it, don't slap it, catch it. If you when the ball comes to your hand, you catch that, because that is those are game changers, and that didn't just happen with the Bears defense, but specifically, I noticed that there were some missed tackles here and there a few times when they should have wrapped some people up, and there was a moment when there was a little bit of confusion on one play I saw when it kind of got lost, and yeah, there was a few bad calls. I will say that in a lot of games today, there was some bad were some bad signs. Yeah, it was a bad call, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to eliminate the game, but there were some noticeable issues. I will say from the referee standpoint.
You're right, and I do say this: it was some. But as long as it didn't affect the outcome of the game, I'm fine with it.
Exactly.
Some of the calls that some blown holdings and whatnot, there were some bad calls, but it didn't affect the outcome of the game. Those are the calls that anger fans the most. Those calls that determine the winner and loser. There was none of those today. There was no calls that said, hey, because I made this sorry messed up call, you're going to lose today. So I give officiating an A-plus for not causing a team to lose a game in week one. I give them an A-plus for that. I do give them a B-minus for some of the bad calls. That was bad officiating that went down. But again, this was live games, win-loss columns, And I think a lot of these refs handle themselves well, coming from the college rank and high school rank and the Vons shop grocery store where they found some of these guys, and the checkout lines at Walmart where they found some of these other officials. So they did pretty good. I can't complain too much. But I'm going to tell you who should be complaining. Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I was wondering when you were going to get to those guys.
Yeah. I watched this game, and I'm going to tell you this. Andy Reid's in trouble. He's in trouble.
Yeah.
Because anytime, please somebody tell me, anytime you have the Cleveland Browns and Brandon Weeden, he played like a rookie. I don't care what his age was. He played like a rookie today. And it was no reason for all the picks he threw. I mean, do he know what team he played for? He threw four picks. He was 12 for 35. You want to know what his quarterback passer rating was? 5.1.
What was the rating?
5.1.
5.1? You kidding me?
I could have been out there and done better than that.
Wow.
5.1 was his passer rating. He completed 12 passes. Actually, he completed 16. Four was just to the other team. And he only threw 418 yards. And I'm telling you right now, I know there were some people out there yelling for Colt McCoy to come on the field. Somebody was yelling, give us Colt, please. That's how bad he played. Trent Richardson, another rookie that the Browns drafted, didn't play well either. He averaged 2.1 yards per carry. 19 rushing attempts for 39 yards, 2.1 yards per carry. That means the minute he touched the ball, he was basically getting tackled instantly. Receiving, Muhammad with three catches, and that's about it. The Browns played horrible, okay? They were offensively dead with only 210 yards total to the Eagles, 456 total yards. The Eagles 25 first down, the Browns 11. But with all this being said, you're saying, well, how is Andy Reid's job in trouble, right? with all of that, with the ineptitude and anemic offense and just poor execution by Brandon Weeden, lack of a running game by Richardson, they only lost by 1 point, despite not having any real offense at all. They only lost by 1 point. You want to know why? Because Michael Vick was throwing the ball to the Browns, too. He threw for 4 picks. He threw 4 picks and only 2 TDs. He threw for over 300 yards. But really, 4 picks? Shh. LeSean McCoy, good game, 20 rushes, 20 attempts, 110 yards. He fumbled the ball. There you go. Jeremy Maclin, he did what he do best. 7 catches and a touchdown to Sean Jackson. 4 catches, 77 yards. But this is the same Eagles team that someone said, we're a dynasty. Dynasties don't beat the Cleveland Browns by 1 point, especially as bad as the Browns play. All right? It's so funny. The top performers, the top player for the Cleveland Browns was Travis Benjamin with 1 catch for 12 yards. He was their best player. The dude only had 1 catch. 1 catch. And you mean to tell me you only win by a point? It doesn't get any easier for the Eagles. You see what I'm saying? The schedule's not going to get any easier. And with that said, if I'm Andy Reid, hey, I'm already putting in calls to other teams that may need a head coach come the end of this season. I'm already filling out my options. Because you cannot play as bad as they did against the Browns, and the Browns play pathetic. Absolutely, I've seen Pop Warner teams play. My nephew's football team, and he's 8 years old, played better than the Browns did, and the Browns only lost by 1 point. If I'm the Eagles, I'm not celebrating. They better not be celebrating. You won by a point. You won by a point, and they barely won because the Browns scored 10 points in the fourth quarter to make it a game. Or it really was a game, the whole game.
It sounds like you're saying that Rex Ryan has more drama than a reality TV show right now. I'm sorry. Right, I don't know why I said Rex Ryan, but yeah. he has a lot of drama going on right now because I agree. I mean, you know, like you said, you said it well when you said an anemic offense because the funny part about it is the Eagles' offense looked better in the preseason this is no disrespect to Michael Vick, but they looked better in the preseason when I saw what's the rookie quarterback they have?
Yeah, and you know what? And I'm going to tell you this.
And that was preseason. That was just preseason.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. It's also the Kevin Cobb effect, I call it. No one gave a chance for the backup quarterback. No one does. No one cares about the backup. No one even expects the backup quarterback to get in. You know, no one game planned for him. So that's why they saw a lot of success. But I'll say this. The defensive side of the ball, the Eagles played good defense.
Yeah, they did well.
They forced 4 turnovers. That's what you want. But that offense, if they don't get it together, LeSean Jackson got paid, LeSean McCoy got paid, Vic, you got paid, you guys got to show up. And Celek, they didn't utilize him. They didn't utilize him at all, and he's going to be a big part of his offense. They didn't utilize him. So if Andy Reid wants his job, this offense better score more than 17 points to beat the Browns. Because, mind you, the same Eagles offense, they still got to go face the Giants. They still got to face those Cowboys. And I'm telling you, the way the Redskins played this past game, they got to go face that too. The Eagles can't afford to play around. They cannot afford it. Andy Reid, you better start looking for you better start putting your resume in. Hey, you might have found a good job on Craigslist.
Wow. You're trying to say that Andy Reid, he's in the squeeze right now.
Yes, he is. If he's not in the squeeze, I don't know what it is. I don't know what to call it then.
Yeah, he's right now he's in a squeeze like walnuts in a nutcracker. So he needs he's gonna have to get it in order right now. And speaking of getting it in order, man, what did you think about? Now, I got to go to this game. I'm just gonna go ahead. What did you think about the St. Louis and Detroit game, the Lions and the Rams?
I'm gonna say this. I'm proud of the Rams. That was a good loss because they fought the entire game. Matthew Stafford had to have a game-winning drive to beat the Browns. To beat the Rams. I'm proud of the Rams. Sometimes some losses are just good losses, you know? And I believe in good losses. I believe in those losses that the team turns around and say, you know what? We lost, but we didn't get blown out. We actually made them work for the win, you know? We made them work. And just like the Giants, both their Super Bowl runs, they faced teams that should have blown them out, and they barely lost. Their first Super Bowl run, when they lost to the Patriots the last game of the season, they lost by 7 points. No, I'm sorry, lost by three.
Yeah,
lost
by
three points. Yeah, and they said, you know what, we can beat And they said, we can beat these guys. Based on the Super Bowl, they beat them. Last year, they faced Green Bay. Green Bay beat them, but Green Bay barely beat them. And they said, we can beat these guys. And they did it in the playoffs, and they won the Super Bowl. The Rams can beat in their heads, and they should feel this way. We can beat the Lions. Who? The Lions have a high-powered offense. No one can say their offense is not high-powered. That offense can score. You know, with Megatron, really? You can't say it's not a high-powered offense? Of course it is. And the fact that it went down to the wire the way it did, I'm the Rams. I'm feeling pretty good about ourselves. I'm feeling good.
You definitely have to say hats off to the defense because they really contain a high power offense. Somebody might look at the stat and say, well, they scored 27 points. It's like, well, 27 points is contained for the Lions because the Lions can put up 40 with no problem.
Okay.
And so, you know, and the fact that they the offense kept it interesting, you know, especially in the fourth quarter, it got real interesting, and they kind of went tit for tat if you think about it, because the St. Louis led off with the field goal in the first quarter. By the second quarter, it was 10-10.
Yeah,
they both scored 10 points. Third quarter, you know, Detroit came back and scored their field goal to even things up, and it came down to the fourth quarter, which of course St. Louis scored 10 points in the fourth, and Detroit edged them by scoring 14 points. That 4 points is what helped them win the game.
And I'm gonna tell you when that 4 points. And this is why, if I'm the Rams, I'm feeling good about this loss, because the Rams kicked the go-ahead field goal with a minute 55 on the clock. That put the ball solely on Matthew Stafford's shoulders. And big kudos to Matthew Stafford for having a game-winning drive. Can't overshadow that. It was a game-winning drive. Big, big arm, big playmaking. And they scored with 10 seconds left on the clock. You know, that's where the 27 come into play, because otherwise they only had 20 points. 20 points with the Calvin Johnson, who was torturing everybody last year, had 6 catches and not a single touchdown. Not a single touchdown. I don't know about you, but that says a lot. You keep Calvin Johnson out the end zone, and you're supposed to be the St. Louis Rams. Big, big-time defense. The defense, three picks. I think that was a good loss for the Rams. I really do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, Sam Bradford, the Rams quarterback, was 17-25, 198 yards, one touchdown. And then when you look at Matthew Stafford, he's got one touchdown, 355 yards, 3 interceptions, 32-48. That's a rough night for a high power offense. That's a rough night.
Yeah.
very rough night, which means if you could
see just 7 more points.
Yep.
You're in the game. It's 7 more points.
Yep. It was a good game, man. I mean, that was another good game. I thought the Lions was just going to run over them and get it out the way, but no. The Saints said we ain't having that. The Rams said we're not having that. We're a pro football team, too, regardless of what our record looked like last year. You know, they did good. Hats off to them. Also, hats off to, I can't believe, the Jets. I've said it numerous times. Mark Sanchez is not a bum. He's not a bum. This is the same guy that beat Tom Brady in New England to go to the AFC Championship game. It's the same guy that beat Peyton Manning in the playoffs to go to the AFC Championship game. This guy beat big quarterbacks in big moments. So he's not a scrub. He's just a little bit on the sensitive side. You know, get a little whiny, insecure. But I'll tell you this, the way he played today, definitely outplayed Fitzpatrick, completing 70% of his passes, threw 3 touchdowns and only 1 pick. Quarterback rating of 123.4. Boy, was he on the money, you know. And we didn't see this out the Jets this preseason. A backup quarterback was the
That wasn't the Jet on the runway at all. No, that was a different kind of plane there.
Yeah.
And that was a different kind of plane.
And I'm going to tell you, I'll say this. Tebow mania is still real because they managed to get him out there. And he ran the ball 5 times for 11 yards, which was basically worthless. It was worthless. Those plays, it wasn't even that impactful. It wasn't impactful at all. They just put him out there because he's a Jet. But Mark Sanchez, and I know a lot of people were saying this, including myself, that if Mark Sanchez has a bad game, they're going to be yelling for Tim Tebow. After the game he just had against revamped Buffalo's defense, I think he bought himself a couple more starts. You know, he bought himself some more starts. They could lose next week. It wouldn't matter. Because of what he did in week one, they're still at 500. If he goes, if the Jets go 2-0, Tim Tebow may not even be thought about starting until week 6 or 5. So let's just see what happens. But this Jets defense, boy, was they on it. They was all over them. 4 turnovers for the Bills. 4. Only thing they couldn't do was stop C.J. Spiller from running the ball. That boy ripped them apart. But they stopped Fred Jackson, Fitzpatrick, 3 picks. Stevie Johnson had a touchdown, it wasn't that impactful. Stephen Hill looked like he might be their number one threat. 2 touchdowns, 5 receptions. This Jets offense didn't surprise a lot of us. Everybody was surprised. They put up 48 points. Really? Really? And then Fitzpatrick threw a pick to Darrell Revis. You don't ever throw it to Darrell Revis. So he said, fine. I'll throw it to Antonio Cromartie. Yeah, Antonio Cromartie picked it up and ran it back for a score. So after that, it wasn't much for him to do but just throw another pick to Kyle Wilson. It was over. The Jets can't keep this up, but at least they got this out the way. What do you make of this game?
Well, you know, this was an interesting game because, as you know, we talked about Sanchez, and we said that he was pretty, you know, he was the type of quarterback that had the ability to be a quality quarterback. We said he wasn't a slouch, and as long as he has the confidence is the key for him, you know, because. It's one of those situations where you got to believe. and today he definitely was. He believed today. It was no doubt about it. I don't know what he ate or what he watched, But somebody convinced him that he was dead on, and he came out and he put up big numbers to the point, to the degree that I, you know, at some point I was kind of, you know, getting upset with the coaching with Rex Ryan and company, because I was getting irritated with the Tim Tebow moments, because I just didn't understand, you know, why are you putting in this other quarterback when you have this guy that's dead on right now? He's hot.
Yep.
You know, you don't take the person that's hot. Your quarterback is on fire, and you're taking him out. You can, that might cool him off, take him out of rhythm. So I think he was very professional. That was the key word today. He played like a professional.
Yeah, he sure did, man. And the hits kept coming, too. The Jets played like they had no choice but to win. Special teams, they got a punt return touchdown. They got a defensive touchdown. Sanchez was clicking. I mean, it was like this. Buffalo was in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's basically it. Wrong place. I think as focused and as honed in as the Jets were today, I think they would have, first of all, they scored more points than any other team today. And there was quite a few 40-point games. Washington put up 40. Atlanta put up 40. You know, Chicago put up 41. So there was no lack of scoring. But the Jets, of all teams, put up more points than everybody thus far. So I think it didn't. I think today it really didn't matter who they was playing. They were just on. We'll see what happens next week, though.
Yeah, because based on their offense today, it looks like they had some stuff on the reserve. They went into the reserve tank, and they said, "Yeah, we've been holding it, waiting for the season. We're waiting for the season, baby. We need the records. We need it on the books."
it was on the books. Another big game, huge game, Green Bay at San Francisco. We knew this was going to be a tight game.
Oh, I watched this game as well, the whole game.
Yes.
This was a game to watch.
Yes, it was. Both quarterbacks, and I mean, yes, I'm talking about Alex Smith, played well. Aaron Rodgers do what he do best, a little over 300 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. It happens when you play in the San Francisco defense. He threw one pick, so what? Alex Smith, 211 yards, two touchdowns. Now, both guys, Alex Smith was sacked four times, Aaron Rodgers sacked three times. So the defense of both teams was getting after it, because the final score was nothing more than 30-22. But the telling thing, in my opinion, was two players. Michael Crabtree played a good game, 7 catches, 76 yards. Big, he stepped up. Everybody told him, you wanted to hold out to get more money? We paid you. Show up, because that postseason against the Giants, he had one catch for 7 yards, was pathetic. He played well. But Randy Moss caught the first touchdown for the Niners of the season, giving him sole possession of number 2 all-time leader and touchdowns, receiving touchdowns, right behind Jerry Rice. Did this in San Francisco in his San Francisco uniform and right behind Jerry Rice. And I expected them to use Moss more and exploit Green Bay's secondary a little bit more. Yes, he had 4 catches, but only 1 score. Didn't see them really try to go deep to him often. He tried a big shot down the field, but, hey, it was what it was. I'm not surprised how this Niners offense worked. I'm not. They've got a lot of talent in a lot of places. And Green Bay tried to keep up, but it came down to just making plays. Green Bay won turnover. That was it. Just making plays. That's, you know, penalties, you know, first game of the season, they'll tighten it up. Packers, again, you know, they got some help. Second, Randall Cobb ran a punt back, 75 yards. And it was a great game. You just couldn't tell who was going to take over and control it, because I thought Green Bay would be dead in the water. They trailed most of the game, but they tried to make a run. The game was closer than what it looked on paper. The game was a lot closer. What do you think about this game?
Yeah, I would definitely say that it was definitely closer than it appeared. Green Bay got off to a slow, they kind of got off to a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that the 49ers came out on fire in the beginning. In the very beginning, they opened up on fire. And who made it interesting was the 49ers defense. The 49ers defense made it interesting, and the Packers defense played a lot better than I expected. I will say that they didn't play great, but they played better than I expected because they did miss a lot of tackles that that's really what cost them a lot. Especially there was a particular tackle where Frank Gore scored, and I saw a few blown tackles, especially one of the very last attempts. It was like, really? What was that? And they have to learn to wrap people up. I don't know. Maybe they need to do that during their next couple of practices. Just focus on wrapping people up because it seemed to lack. They didn't wrap up people enough. The offense was explosive. They frustrated. The defense did a great job at frustrating Aaron Rodgers a whole lot. They were all in his face oftentimes, sometimes he scrambled and made some big plays, but you could really see the frustration on the face of Aaron Rodgers from not just from people dropping passes, a few people dropped some good passes, but overall the defense was just very aggressive, and I think they showed, they exploited something about Aaron Rodgers. If people forgot, you got to get in his face. If you stay on him, if you stay on him, you can really, really get to keep the game in motion. And that's the key to stopping Green Bay, is really frustrating Aaron Rodgers. And they did a great job at that.
Yeah, I'll say this. San Francisco definitely does this a lot. They're not afraid to get beat deep. And when I say that, they'll come after you. They're going to come after you. And they're going to say, look, you're going to have to beat us. We ain't gonna, we're not gonna be like, oh man, this guy, we don't wanna leave ourselves out there because he could possibly hurt us. They're basically, I dare you to hurt us, No freebies. If you're gonna burn us, we're gonna make you earn it. And
did you catch the one play that they brought in the second string or third string, I'm not sure which one, quarterback in to run the play? I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of things going on, and I'll say this, man. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks in the game. I don't know
Absolutely.
If I can deny that, but on the same token, he definitely stays at one of the best defenses in the league.
Yeah,
he was. And, boy, that was a good game. I mean, they trailed most of the game, but it still was a good game. And I was really impressed about the Niners' defense. They did not let Aaron Rodgers get off. And another thing, I don't think a lot of people understand this either. Greg Jennings, the number one receiver for Green Bay, right? This is the last year of his contract. And it's a 50-50 chance he's not going to be in Green Bay next year. So I wonder how the season will really unfold for the Packers, knowing that it's a good chance their star receiver won't be there next year. It's a good chance. So just throwing that out there, a little food for thought about the Packers this season. Just a little bit. Great game, though. Speaking of great games. Yeah, it was a great game. Speaking of great games. New England Patriots did something that I haven't seen or anyone has seen them do in an extremely, 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 extremely long time. They successfully ran the ball. Yes, Stephen Ridley, Patriots running back, ran the ball 21 times for 125 yards and a touchdown.
Wow.
Didn't see that coming. I know this offseason Bill Belichick said they're going to make a conscious effort to run the ball. And I think if Steven Radley didn't run the ball well, they might have said, man, we might have to start passing a little bit more. But that wasn't the case. Tom Brady didn't even throw for 300 yards. He threw for 236. Why does, you know, he doesn't have, I mean, if Ridley can continue to do this, the Patriots has gotten that much more better because now they have a running and pass attack. So I was very impressed that they was able to successfully run the ball. But now also what that does, that take away pass attempts from Tom Brady was take away targets from Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez, and Brandon Lloyd, and Wes Walker. That means these guys won't see as many targets as they would before. So all you fantasy people, hey, no food for thought, something you should think about. Patriots game or massacre?
I mean, it was explosive. 162 yards rushing, really? Man, that was it was explosive. I mean, they averaged 4.6 yards on the ground. That was quite intense to watch them put up 162 yards in rushing and still have 228 yards passing in the same game. Yeah, that, I would say that was impressive. And I don't know. Well, you know what? The funny part about it is a lot of people were talking about the mighty, mighty Titans. And the Titans didn't look that mighty tonight. I'm just saying.
Chris Johnson looked like a bum. I had him
on. Wow.
And that boy did nothing. 11 rushes for 4 yards. He looked like an absolute bum. Even the Pat defense, boy, were they on it. They was everywhere you wanted to be. Everywhere. So, Jake Locker, he played a hell of a game. He sure did. Threw for 229 yards, a touchdown to pick, but he held his own. You know, he held his own.
Yeah, Hightower got on it, too.
Huh?
I said Hightower with the scoop and score.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know what else I can say is that, you know, I told you all about Tennessee. They that girl that's across the cafeteria. You look at them from a far distance, like, ooh, she looks so good. But when you start walking across the cafeteria to go talk to her, you start noticing little things. Her nose a little bit big. Her forehead's a little big. She looks like she got bags under her eyes. And when you get on top of her, you're like, she's not as cute as you thought. And
I will say this about the Titans for the Titan fans. The good news is, you know, there's a whole season to go. That's the good news. This is just one game. That's the good news. So you have time to make a few tweaks here and there and some improvements. So with the Titans, ultimately time is going to tell with this team because, you know, on paper and stuff, they may look good, but they're really going to have to, like the Eagles, they're going to have to prove it.
Yep.
They're going to have to prove that they're good.
They have to. I mean, especially Chris Johnson, dude. They paid you the money that you held out for. They paid you. They paid you. You run for 4 yards. Somebody go ahead and slap that boy. 4 yards? I understand the Patriots is putting together a pretty good defense, but they're still gelling. You know, really? Yeah. They have a lot of work cut out for them, too. A lot of work cut out for them. But the Pats definitely, they put it together. Tennessee, I don't know what to say about them. They're not who we thought they were. I know you we got time. I don't know if you had reservations about this game here. Carolina at Tampa, and Cam Newton, he had a bad game.
Yeah, that was an ugly game to watch. I didn't expect the Panthers to win this game anyway, but I didn't know it was going to be as ugly as it was. I mean, that was not a pretty game.
No, it wasn't.
My hat has to go off to the defense, though. The defense the Tampa Bay defense, and the Panthers defense didn't do bad either. You know, those the defense, it was all about the defense in this game. In these, this game. It was all about the defense.
Yep. I expected Vincent Jackson to go off. 6'3", big target. Carolina doesn't have really any real corners or safety that can help over the top to try to really negate his height. And Tampa didn't take advantage of his height. Steve Smith, big game, 7 catches over 100 yards, but never made it to the end zone at all. Bend but don't break. Doug Martin, a lot of people say he's definitely the future of the Tampa Bay running game, and he was, 95 yards on the ground. But the Carolina rushing game was dead too. D'Angelo Williams, 6 attempts, but negative 1 yard. Yep, 6 attempts, negative 1 yard. So Carolina stunk it up everywhere you can. And just so happened, I had D'Angelo Williams and Cam Newton on my fantasy team starting, and both of them stunk it up. Big props to Tampa's defense to keep these two under control. And they did a good job. You know, they did a very, very good job on Cam, forcing picks, sacking him, getting in his head. I don't expect the Panthers to play many more games like this, nor Tampa Bay. It's definitely a long season. These guys will meet again, and we'll see what happens. What do you get?
Yeah, you know, this is one of those situations where there needs to be some tweaking. You know, there needs to be some adjustments. There needs to be some shouting, some hollering, some tape watching. I mean, something's got to give because, I mean, I was just watching the game, and, you know, and I was looking for, you know, that old Cam Newton magic, you know. It was really, really, you know, missing today, you know. I didn't find it, you know, because it's usually, if you can't, who can Cam Newton? You know, that's usually how it is. If you can't, who can Cam Newton? I made that rhyme. Yeah, it worked. So that's usually how it's supposed to work for the Panthers. But however, it didn't quite work out that way. And, you know, on offensively, they have to figure out something. They're going to have to look at the schemes, you know, look at the playbook and figure out how to execute. I mean, the Panthers really, they're going to need to figure that out because, you know, they were pretty explosive last season.
Yeah, they was.
And they we were. Just... We want to see that again. I mean, because it's exciting to see. Just as an NFL fan, I wanted to see that exciting display we got from last season. And I felt real bad for Cam Newton because he had to scramble an awful lot. But I was, you know, at the very, very one of the very last plays when he was doing, you know, trying to do the last push in the fourth quarter, trying to push the team to possibly. Tying up the game. What was interesting for me is he made this one attempt where he tried to run towards the goal line and get a first down, and it took about five guys. it took about five big linebackers to stop Cam. And you know how usually you see a running back get tackled by a group of people and they just pile up on the guy.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, it looked like he was pushing them. And I think if it wasn't like five people, I don't know how that might not have worked out too well for the opposing team. But it just showed the incredible strength that Cam Newton has just in that play. But he was Mr. Make It Happen. At least he attempted to be Mr. Make It Happen tonight because he was literally, the game was on his shoulders. Because people just wasn't doing, no one was doing anything, really.
Yeah, I agree, man. Hey, you know, it's like, I'll just say this. Better luck next week. Sure. Better luck next week. Speaking about better luck next week, the Falcons took apart Kansas City. The Falcons finally, well, I'll say right now, realized the offensive talent that they really had and decided to use the offensive talent that they really have. Last year, postseason, they got embarrassed. They lost to the Giants 24-2.
Yeah.
Embarrassing. 2 points. 2 points that the Giants gave. Otherwise, it would have been shut out.
What is it about Atlanta teams? They do well in the regular season, and then it's something about the playoffs.
I don't know what it is. And against, you know, normally a lot of sometimes against mediocre teams they kind of struggle, but they put to the gas and just did it. Matt Ryan had a great day, 299 passing, 3 touchdowns, no picks. I'm gonna tell you this: Julio Jones and Riley White. I think Atlanta is probably the only team in the league that I can think of off the top of my head that honestly have two number one wide receivers. Because Julio Jones, because Riley White is
a wow.
wide receiver. He's the number one receiver in Atlanta, okay?
Mm.
But Julio Jones is right there. Like, Roddy White's number one because he was there longer. I think that's the only reason. Because he has the bigger contract, and he was there longer. But Julio Jones today, 6 catches, over 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. Roddy White, 6 catches, 87 yards. You know, these two guys right here at the wide receiver spot, I think if Julio Jones could go to most other teams and be the number one wide receiver, you know, he would be, if he goes to put him in San Francisco, he's the number one wide receiver, you know. Matter of fact, I think if you send him, you know, if you put him in New York, he's probably number one wide receiver. I'm talking about the Giants. There's a lot of teams you can stick him on, he's the number one wide receiver, except in Atlanta, he's the number two. And I think just because seniority for Roddy White. But Matt Ryan utilized both these guys. And not to mention, he also utilized the greatest tight end to play the game, Tony Gonzalez, who had 5 catches for a touchdown. Now, the flip side, the running game was nowhere to be found. Michael Turner, 11 carries for 32 yards, and that's it. Matt Ryan had a rushing touchdown. You know, I hope the Falcons don't go pass heavy. Because they go pass heavy, I don't think they'll be able to sustain that all year. You know, I don't think they can. I think they need to keep Michael Turner incorporated into that offense. But I hope they realize how powerful their offense really is with those two number one wide receivers and a number one tight end. And not many teams have that. Very few teams have two starting wide receivers that both can easily be the number one target. Very few teams have that. So it's going to be.
Oh no! Yeah, you're right. The potential for the Falcons is tremendous, and they're one of those. I don't know. They're one of those teams that are, you know, they get you excited in the regular season, and you know, you get to the playoffs, and it's like, oh, what happened?
Yeah,
it's like another team. So for Atlanta, for Falcons fans, hopefully they'll be able to carry the momentum throughout the entire season, all the way over to the postseason.
Yeah. They hope. But, you know, even then, I don't trust them in the postseason because the last 2 years, they got blown out. They got literally blown out.
Exactly.
Just disgusting, you know. So, you know, it's like this. They don't have regular season champs, you know. And it is the first game of the season against Kansas City, who is not huge on defense. I still think the Falcons, I said this before for the season, so I think they're going to have they're going to be a top five offense. Honestly, I think they're going to be a top three offense. I think they're going to be 1, 2, or 3 in this league as far as offensive production. Because, again, there's no reason they should score on at least 35% of their possessions with that offense that they have. But we'll see. It's going to be all depends upon the head coach and how he runs this offense. So, I know you have some things you wanted to talk about. Sit him or start him?
Yeah, you know, first, you know, first person I definitely want to bring to the table as a particular what do they usually call them as an example, because I don't have the term in my mind right now, but we got to talk about the Tim Tebow, Mark Sanchez experiment. The Wildcat, our cat, your cat, my cat, whatever you want to call it, and the snakes on the plane. You know, somebody needs to sit Rex Ryan down and talk to him and tell him, explain to him. Yeah, you need to sit the coach down and explain to the coach that when you have a quarterback and your quarterback is hot, on fire, you know, pretty much what everybody looks for in their quarterback so that they can have to win, actually win a game. You want the quarterback to be on fire. And when he's on fire, you don't sit the quarterback down to play play, you know, another game of what do we want to call it? I don't know, reality TV, Tebow-thon? I mean,
Tebow-thon, yeah, I guess. Tebow loves that.
There's no time for Tebow-thon. We want to win. Well, at least you would assume you want to win. I mean, that's after, you know, that's supposed to be the objective. And, I mean, somebody's got to talk to him. I mean, do you start him? Or do you sit him? You got to make up your mind. Do you want to start Sanchez? I say you start him because he was productive. And you look at the two when you put each person in. I mean, of course, Tebow didn't have a whole game. And that's what people who are going to advocate for Tebow, they're going to say, well, hey, you know, he didn't play the whole game. And, okay, I'll let them have that. They'll have that. But that means nothing if the person who did play got the job done, because that's the point that you're making. If, as long as the guy that you told, you gave the starting nod to produce, he usually is supposed to keep that job. And he should not be competing for a job that he's winning.
Yeah, and winning handily right now.
Exactly. And I mean, that brings me, of course. That brings me, of course, to another situation going on. Now, we also have the debate. We have the debate that's going on right now within the another familiar quarterback, you know, on the Seahawks. You know, they have a rookie starting, Wilson. And, you know, I think, you know, he did as good as you can get, I guess, in that case. He didn't look bad to me. I mean, you know. But I wanted to ask you, in that case, with that particular player, would you start Wilson or would you have sat Wilson, particularly after this particular game?
You know what? I would have started him. I don't think he played bad, you know, in my opinion. I don't think he played bad. I don't think the Seahawks necessarily played bad. There was some plays that was left out there on the field. Mind you, he's another rookie quarterback that was tossed out there against a hungry Arizona Cardinals team that is so desperately looking for something to go their way. You know, after the abysmal season of last year, having Kevin Cobb and then figuring out who's going to be their starting quarterback and all this other stuff that's just swarming around his team, they needed to come out hot. They needed to. And Seattle, you know, when Wilson got the start, a lot of people were skeptical of it. Oh, that's a bad move. What happened to Matt Flynn? You paid him all that money. But if you look at the stat line, Russell Wilson technically outplayed John Skelton. He outplayed him. He completed a couple more passes more than him. Pass percentage is just a tad bit higher. He threw a touchdown and one pick. Skelton just threw a pick. Kevin Cobb, the guy who lost his job or may have gotten his job back, he comes in the game and goes 6 of 8 and throw the touchdown that was needed, that they needed more than anything. Kevin Cobb saved the Cardinals because Seattle was winning. You know, Seattle had, I mean, I think it was what, 13 unanswered points? They had 13 points unanswered. And Kevin Cobb, who knew, Seattle's winning. Kevin Cobb comes with like 4 minutes to seven on the clock, almost five. Touchdown pass. And Wilson brings it down to the red zone, couldn't get it done. It happened. But overall, good game for him. I expect him to play better from this point on. I do expect more out of him. There was a Brandon Edwards sighting. He had five catches.
I think that's a fair assessment. And, oh, speaking of fair assessments, when it comes to stardom or sit-em, you know, the rookie had his debut in Miami, Tannehill, and his game was quite interesting. I mean, 219 yards in the air, 20 for 36 for his attempts and, you know, the amount that he actually, made, his receptions. I mean, the amount, the attempts, according to, I mean, the attempts and the amount of catches people actually had. And, of course, you know, the three picks hurt him a lot. Some people say start him. Some people might say sit him. And it appeared that today Miami's offense was similar to the acronym that they used to represent the state, I mean the team, which is MIA, because the offense was absolutely MIA. What do you think about starting the particular quarterback Tannehill at the QB, because Aaron Chingaling Foster, Arian ran all over them this game with the Tech.
You know, I don't know. I probably voiced this before. I'm in favor of Matt Moore. I've always been in favor of Matt Moore because Matt Moore played some pretty tough NFL games, most notably the Cowboys game on Thanksgiving. He kept them in it. They lost that game, but he played well. And from that point on for the rest of the season, he was playing strong, very strong. I understand the Dolphins' position. They drafted Tannehill pretty high. They want him out there playing. I get that. But at what point do you sacrifice your quarterback's confidence just for the ownership's ego and the management's ego? We drafted you, you're going to start, instead of just letting him, you know, come along and get some grooming. Because he played horrible. He was 20 for 36. He only threw for 219 yards. You're like, well, that's not bad. Sacked three times and three picks with a quarterback rating of 39. Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. Reggie Bush couldn't do a whole lot because Tannehill couldn't spread the field. He couldn't get this defense to back off. So Bush did whatever he thought he could do. Andre Johnson played and played well. Mike Tannehill did what he thought he can do, and it wasn't even close to even halfway good. If Mike Tannehill has another abysmal, I can't say abysmal because he completed 55% of his passes. He just couldn't finish drives, so he was throwing it away. If by week three, Mike Tannehill has at least six picks and three touchdowns, I think they need to start revisiting Matt Moore. I think they might want to put Matt Moore in. If by week three or four, he has far more interceptions than touchdowns and the Dolphins don't have a win, Matt Moore might have to come back and be the starting quarterback and let Tannehill learn the system by sitting down and watching.
Wow. No, I totally agree. I think, you know, that the whole situation was quite interesting. Maybe they, like you said, maybe they should look into Matt Moore because I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better in Miami. And Miami is one of those teams at this stage that has yet to figure out their identity. And, you know, they just, you know, we know there are some pieces that they don't have. And we understand that. But they are also an NFL team, which means that all the players were good enough to go professional. So at some point, as a coach, you have to figure out how to get this team functioning in a way that's going to be productive and successful. where you can get the best out of Miami. Now, I don't think that they're the best team in the NFL or like one of the top tier teams, but I'm very sure that they're not as bad as they appear to be on the field right now.
Right, and just to put this in proper perspective, they did go up against one of the best defense from last year. They did face the best defense in the NFL statistically last year. It's still one of the top five defenses in the league. A rookie faced a top 5 defense. You know, again, it could have been a lot worse. Well, it was pretty bad. 30-10 don't get any worse than that. We'll see what happens. If he could bounce back from this and have a good game, that's mental toughness. If he falls into the woe is me, better go get Matt Moore. Better go find that young man. You're going to have to. Who else is on your stardom sit-em list?
Well, we all know that AP is back. And some people are guessing and some people are wondering of should he come back. Is it a rush job? Should he come back right now? Should he sit down? Do they have enough pieces to allow him to rest further to make sure that he is absolutely 100%. He looked pretty good today to me. After all you've seen displayed on the field by AP, Operation Peterson, what do you think? Do you start him or do you sit him to protect him for further injury?
I'll say this. I'll start him, but I will limit his attempts. I wouldn't have him running the ball 20, 25 times a night. They let him run the ball 17 times. That's good. I give him 17 carries. I give him between 15 and 17 carries. And as the season go on, by week eight, if he hasn't suffered any kind of setback or re-aggravated that ACL, then you're going to get your 20 carries. You're going to get your five extra carries or more. You get your 20 carries. You get your 22 carries. But I won't just say, hey, you're going to have to run. You want to get the most out of him for as long as you can and not abuse his body. So he did well. I mean, 84 yards, 2 touchdowns on 17 attempts. He did very well. But, again, you got to put things in perspective. It was against Jacksonville. It was. And I'll say this, though, but Jacksonville pushed them, you know, battle of the uglies, I guess you want to call it.
The toilet bowl.
The toilet bowl. Blaine Gabbert, 59% of his passes he completed. He was outplayed by Christian Ponder. I won't necessarily say that. As far as completion, yes. But he did throw 2 touchdown strikes. One of them was to Mercedes Lewis, their tight end, who's definitely going to be his safety blanket. Justin Blackman, another rookie, got three catches for 13 yards. Leonard Robinson, former Cowboys from last year, 5 catches, 6 yards. So this offense is going to be okay. Maurice Jones-Drew, 77 yards on the ground out of 19 attempts. What do you think about his game, him coming back and contributing the way he did?
Oh, yeah, you know, MJD, you know, he does what he does, man. I mean, he puts up numbers. I mean, that's what we're accustomed to getting from him. So I'm not surprised at him being able to be productive. But I'm still stuck on Foster's productivity. It was pretty good. He put up a lot of points. I'm talking about for the Texans. But yeah, he did his thing though. He did his thing. I cannot lie. He, you know, I expected him, especially against Minnesota, to put up some numbers. You know, if he didn't have a pretty good game against the Vikings, you know, I don't know. If I was a Jacksonville fan, I would be concerned. But just as a sports fan, I would have been concerned. I would be concerned because, I mean, he's clearly one of the more productive guys on the offensive end of the field at the running back position.
Yep. Yes. It was a good game too. This is another one. Blaine Gabbert. It's this game. If I'm Jacksonville, I'm a little upset. Blaine Gabbert, you know, he threw a touchdown strike, all right, with 20 seconds on the clock to Cecil Short, you know, 29 yards and a touchdown pass. And it also converted the two-point conversion. And because they understand, you know, you want to make sure if Minnesota gets a chance, the best they can do is tie the game. And Minnesota got the ball back with less than 20 seconds left on the clock and managed to get down the field and kick a 55-yard field goal to go into overtime by Blair Walsh and then kick the game winner and overtime, a 38-yard field goal. So, I mean, Jacksonville can't win for losing. They just can't win for losing. So we'll see what game two has to bring for Jacksonville. But right now, that one is probably a tough loss, in my opinion. I think that's it.
Oh yeah, that means right now they're on the bottom of the boat barrel right now.
Yeah.
So they need a redeem game.
Yeah, they need to do something. they do. But again, it was a good game. But again, it's the toilet bowl, you know. And Jared Allen wasn't playing. He didn't play. And that guy right there, you want to talk about getting after the quarterback. No one gets after it better than him. No one. And him not being out there mattered. It was a big factor in this game. But we'll see. We'll see and see how things transpire with Jacksonville. Now, I think we covered most of the games, if not all of them. Pittsburgh-Denver is going on right now, in case you didn't know. And right now, it looks like, hold on a second.
We're 0-0.
Yep, they still hammering it out right now. And that's the only other game really, you know, talking about. But talking about hammering stuff out, Friday, judge ruled in favor of Jonathan Vilma to vacate his suspension that was placed upon him by Sir Roger Goodell. So what is next for the commissioner? What does it say about the commissioner? Did he go after Jonathan Vilma again and Will Smith, who played today, or do we just let the dogs lay where they lay and just keep it moving? Does this hurt some of his authority? Does it expose him? What does this do for his image in the NFL amongst the players as well as fans and owners? Adair, you let me know. What do you think it does?
Well, you know, I've actually noticed some resistance, so to speak, when it comes to Goodell. A lot of, you know, some of the attitudes and the perspective of people, you know, their feelings towards him aren't going too well. He needs a little PR.
Yeah.
Because let's just say he doesn't exactly have a fan club right now based on some of the things that's happening in court. Are pretty much confirming what the players are saying, and instead of justifying Goodell's decision, it's starting to make him look bad. Now we haven't seen yet, you know, the magnitude of which is going to affect the entire league and the relationship of the players and the entire organization towards him, or his ability, you know, to make certain judgment and how people will accept, you know, look at his word, you know, because the word of an official of his caliber, somebody in his position, is very important, you know, because if the people don't respect you and trust you, that can pose a big problem in the NFL,
yes,
in any league, in any form of leadership. So I think if I was Goodell personally, I would allow the legal system to have impact on my decision, to influence my decision. Because if I said one thing and then the legal system said another thing, then by me allowing, you know, by me accepting what the legal system does, now it's on them. Because if somehow, some way it comes out later that, you know, what I was saying was accurate, then, you know, now it kind of points the finger at the system.
Yep. It does. I agree. I think Goodell needs to lay low a little bit. And it's so funny, he took another lashing about the Kenny Britt situation. This man's been arrested 8 times, and he's only serving a 1-game suspension. He's constantly been in trouble, off the field, arrested 8 times, and he gets a 1-game suspension. And here it is with Jonathan Vilma and company. Apparently didn't have any real strong enough evidence to do what he did, and he wanted to suspend these guys for a whole year. That's pretty crazy. You know, you don't have any strong evidence, apparently, to suspend a guy for a whole year. But you have another guy who's constantly getting arrested, and you suspend him for a game? To me, that just seems ass backwards. So I think his judgment is now going to be questioned because of the Kenny Britt lack of suspension, really, 1 game, and how that Jonathan Vilma and the rest of the Saints players that was implemented in the Bounty Gate scandal, as far as them knowing about it and participating in it, gives him a black eye, in my opinion. He still holds the final, he still can go ahead and let the suspension ride, but boy, would that look like he has no respect for the court of law. And that would hurt his image, him being a lawyer himself. So I think he's going to roll with it and take it on the chin. If he does anything different than that, expect a lot of hostility from the players and Saints fans. And just fans in general that's not going to trust him because we all have our favorite players, you know. And how will we feel with Goodell just unconsciously, without any real evidence, just suspend our player from our team that can hurt us, you know. So he loses a lot of political capital with the fans and players, and maybe even with some of the owners. I'm not sure on that one, but I think he would. So I think he needs to fall back and just let it go. But it's a good day for Jonathan Vilma. He gets to play football again. I think he's only happy about that. So, right now, Pittsburgh's up 3-0. Denver has the ball, and it's in the second quarter. The rest of that game, I don't know. Again, I just hope they can protect Peyton Manning. Hate to see him in the season with Nassia from Troy Polamalu. Don't run, dude. Just stay in the pocket and throw it away. There's 2 other games left for week 1, Monday night game. Cincinnati, Baltimore, Oakland, and San Diego. Definitely stay tuned for those. Who you got winning those games?
Interesting. Well, let's see. The first game, I'm trying to look at my list because I tend to have like a listing of the games. But repeat them to me. Oh, okay, I see them. Here they are. So, of course, I believe I'm going to go with the Ravens, surprisingly.
Okay.
You know, well, I guess it isn't really a surprise, depending on how you look at it. But I'll take, you know, teams have been surprising me so far this season.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna take the Ravens with 6 points. 6-point
okay.
win.
Okay. That's a modest one.
Yeah, that's mine. Yeah, the Chargers. I already said that I believe the Broncos will win by 6 tonight against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Even though I like the Pittsburgh Steelers,
yeah,
I wanted to be on the odd side today. So I'm going against a team I like.
Okay.
Just trying to be different.
Cool. Well,
Chargers Raiders. I'm going to go with the Chargers.
Yeah, the Raiders just for some reason can't get it together. But the Chargers, too. Both. Look, I'm going to tell you one thing about this game. The only thing I know is going to happen, somebody's going to get shot and a police getting called. Because they always have the police called in these Duck Bowl games they have. But that's our time for today. You can definitely check us out every Monday and Thursday at 8 o'clock Pacific Standard Time on 5G Sports Talk. Just go to 5G, just go to Blog Talk Radio 5G Sports Talk, and we broadcast every Monday and Thursday. Until then, you all be safe, and we will see you when we see you. Peace.